Your Health with Dr. Jill, a weekly conversation about health topics with Dr. Jill Valerius.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Jill.
Good morning, Lee. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I am well, thank you.
Okay. So we were talking about cancer last week, and you reminded me that we hadn't quite finished talking about the Warburger effect with cancer. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so we kind of left off talking about the Warburg effect in relation to cancer, and the Warburg effect is named after a guy named Otto Warburg, and he got a Pulitzer, or he got a Nobel Prize in 1931, but this is all based around the idea of cancer metabolism and how cancer cells fuel their own proliferation via, they burn a lot of sugar. And we also use more anaerobic, so without oxygen, energy production is what cancer cells tend to do. But so what it does is also, in understanding how cancer cells fuel themselves, we also then can exploit vulnerabilities. And so that's where, when he goes into the last part of his runaway cell chapter, is really talking about new and emerging therapies in cancer, targeting using immunotherapy, and we can, number one, target cancer metabolism with drugs, with diet, but also using different ways, like I would say, you know, targeting our T cells and things like that. It's kind of like when people have, you know, they end up having a bone marrow and they get stem cell replacement, those kind of things. So that's kind of where I think we're headed, and headed in terms of different immune therapies, different ways to target specific cells or train our immune system to attack things. And then also potential vulnerabilities in the way like cancer metabolizes.
Right. So the thing about cancer is, even though the cells are not really helpful cells, our immune system doesn't recognize them and target them. So this immunotherapy is training parts of our immune system to actually destroy cancer cells, which typically doesn't happen in a progression of cancer. Is that correct? Did I say that right?
Yeah, often we don't recognize cancer cells as non-self, if that makes sense to people. Mm-hmm. So our immune system is constantly, you know, kind of saying, is this an invader or is this me? And so a lot of times tumors and those things kind of fly under the radar, kind of like viral infections, like a wart can. Your body just like doesn't recognize it there.
Right.
So yeah, there is more advancement happening in terms of retraining T cells and using some genetic engineering in that sense. Sometimes the vaccines like can be used like with things like melanomas. So very, very interesting, different things that are happening on the front for cancer therapy.
And if I recall correctly from some of the immunotherapy, sometimes it has to be particularly targeted towards the cancer cells in that person's body, some mutation or something that says, this is not good, go get it. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, we're advancing in how, you know, how we can take a piece of a tumor and basically analyze it. And so we've made some advances there. So that way also in this next level of therapy, we're going to be able to really more personalize therapy a bit more than certainly in oncology and in cancer therapy. We have different regimens that we use that have been used a long time. But when we can go this next level, we'll be able to start to personalize beyond the standards that we've used and actually maybe layer some therapies on top of standard treatment.
Right. And he did talk, Dr. Attia did talk about stacking treatments, and in particular, really going after the fact that cancer cells need glucose. And if you minimize the amount of glucose in your body by eating a very low carbohydrate diet, the cancer cells are not as vibrant. Maybe they can't divide as fast.
Right. And I think, you know, it's one of those ways to, it's as we learn more, it's exposing those vulnerabilities. And certainly he talks a little bit about the fast mimicking diet, that was developed by Walter Longo. And this diet's a really low-calorie diet, but it provides essential nutrients. And so it is really fast-mimicking, if you will. And it's a very interesting diet, but they've found that people were more likely and tumors were more likely to respond to chemotherapy, and people would have less adverse effects or, you know, unwanted effects of their chemotherapy while using a fast mimicking diet in conjunction with their chemotherapy. So, you know, lots of fascinating things. And he talks about this like on the horizon, mm-hmm. but time will tell. As we know of these horsemen, you know, we've made headway in some cancer therapies. We've not in many. And so maybe this will be the next thing.
That would be exciting. So more hopeful news on the horizon in terms of treating these hard tumor cell bodies that form in.
Sure.
Okay, good. Well, Dr. Jill, shall we start our conversation about dementia, the fourth horseman?
Yes. So the fourth horseman is dementia and Alzheimer's dementia. And then we'll actually get into the next part of the book. So it's a little bit more action focused.
Mm-hmm. I was fascinated, you know, I'm reading the book on my iPad, so I've highlighted some things, but there are about 6 million people in our country diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And there's other dementias too, Lewy body dementia, about 1.4 million, and about 1 million have Parkinson's. And all of those are, you know, diseases that affect the brain. And one of the things that fascinated me about that is I know 2 people who recently died of dementia and another of Parkinson's and another person who has it. So Parkinson's seems like it's the fastest growing neurodegenerative disease, according to Dr. Attia. So that was interesting to me. It's like it's not just Alzheimer's to worry about or to be conscious of, perhaps.
Sure. And he also talks about, you know, other neurodegenerative conditions like ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease, and Huntington's disease. So this has a major impact, obviously, on people. And it really involves a lot of people. And it's unfortunately been increasing.
Right. I think also under Medicine 2.0 that Dr. Attia talks about, there's really no cure or treatment for dementia. You know, you just get sicker and sicker and lose whatever capacity of your brain that is affected. Whereas it's not quite as bleak as that under Medicine 3.0, or maybe not bleak at all.
Right. And I think, you know, Dr. Attia goes through and talks about understanding Alzheimer's and dementia. And he talks a little bit about amyloid plaques and, you know, it's interesting. He talks about some of the newer drugs that have been, he talked about a drug that was called aducanumab, mm-hmm. kind of a mouthful, in 2021. And it's very interesting because I think if anybody looks up Alzheimer's, like something you're going to see is amyloid plaque, or you might read neurofibrillary tangles, but amyloid plaque has long been a target. And the question is, it's very interesting because this drug that got approved in 2021 has been turned down twice before. And so very fascinating because the drugs that have been approved, you know, a lot of them are going after this amyloid plaque. And I would almost say with less thinking about why we might be building it, instead, we're just trying to destroy. And it's really quite interesting because like a drug like this new one that is questionably effective is like $28,000 a year.
Right, right. It is fascinating to me, the whole story of how, you know, when Alzheimer's disease was first seen, I forget, with that a woman back in the early 20th century, you know, her brain had a lot of amyloid plaques. So it was just the assumption that those caused Alzheimer's disease without ever testing that hypothesis. It was just became the fact, which we're less certain of now because there have been many, many drug trials that have tried to reduce the plaque so that you wouldn't have Alzheimer's disease, and they've pretty much all failed. And there are people who have plaques and don't have Alzheimer's disease, and people who have Alzheimer's disease and don't have plaques. And then there was one of those seminal studies about Alzheimer's back in the 2000s where some of the data was faked about plaques. So we're not even sure. We're not even, it's like we've probably been looking for the wrong thing for a long time.
It's quite potential, and it's interesting. This is medicine 2.0 and pharma-driven medicine in the 21st century. So it is interesting. And he, you know, he really talks about this, and he goes into a portion of this chapter where he's talking about, can it be prevented? He utilizes the example of a good friend of his, her mother. I think he initially had talked about somebody's mother who had died of dementia. And then he talks about a patient that is very concerned because they have two copies of the APOE4 gene, which would put you at higher risk of dementia. And so he starts to talk through that a bit and talks a bit about, you know, what do I do and how do I help this patient who has this potential increased risk from a genetic standpoint, but how do I help reassure her and how do I help her move forward with the idea of trying to avoid this in the future? And so he talks through that, which I think is good. I find it interesting, as you and I have spoken before, Lee, and we've spoken about when we've talked about cognitive decline on the show previously, very interesting that he seems, I don't know that unaware is the right word, but he doesn't certainly go into talking about some of the Bredesen work and some of the more preventative and treatment work that both you and I have read.
Right, right. Yes, yes. Basically, Dr. Tia addresses lifestyle issues. I mean, exercise is like his number one thing to help keep your brain functioning, and then eating a healthy diet and getting good sleep and minimizing stress. So he's got all those things, but he doesn't address environmental issues that could be part of the pressure or the cause that moves someone into a cognitive decline that compromises brain function.
Right.
One of the things he talked about, Dr. Jill, is the cardiovascular component that might be driving dementia with reduced blood flow to the brain. Could you address that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think one of the main things that we think about in terms of blood flow, to me, that's where why really his focus on exercise. Through so many things. And we know as a corollary, you know, one way to like pump blood through our bodies is to obviously be moving and breathing. I mean, not that it doesn't do it when we're not doing that, but that certainly will help. And there's I think there's a pretty direct correlation between movement and brain health. So, I mean, I think that's kind of the biggest thing that I would say about, or when I think about a blood flow standpoint and cognition or cognitive decline.
Okay. Well, we have to wrap up for this week, Dr. Jill, but I have another question about the whole blood flow thing when we come back next week.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay. Have a great
week. Everybody have a great week. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Your Health with Dr. Jill is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.